Good morning, world diners and travelers. Welcome to On the Menu.
Oh, you're going to welcome me. I thought I was being left out today.
No, I was going to say good morning.
Here I am once again.
We have a full show again.
Yeah, it's... it's a little on the sweet side. The last segment is both sweet and savory on the subject of a wonderful favorite of Mrs. Spratt, but not Jack Spratt, or Fat. But that's just the trailer for what's coming at the end of the program. So if you've always wanted to know about Fat, stick with us all the way through. In the meantime, though, we're starting out with Sweets for the Sweet, I think would be a good description of the mission of this particular company, which actually combined two. It got us all very confused because one company bought another one. They're still selling the product line under the old name.
Yeah, well, it's very good. I finished off the batch we had in the refrigerator.
I wondered where they'd all gone, but I certainly made my contribution to the reduction in the amount. So let's talk to some wonderful candy people who are from all places, Colorado, hotbed of chocolate and candy. We didn't know, but we sure found out.
We're going to be having some sweet, sweet talk right now. Welcome to the show, Doug Simmons and Emery Dorsey of Enstrom Candies, Inc., who, it's a very complicated arrangement. I guess it's one candy company now, but we have been tucking into something so yummy, which came with a label called Stephanie's, and it was a finalist in the Fancy Food Show for its Almond Butter Crunch, which is absolutely yum, yum, yum.
Yeah, my dental bills are rising just even thinking about tucking into this stuff.
Anyhow, welcome you two, and we may also be talking to Jamie, who is part of the team, and Doug's wife, and Enstrom.
Yeah, she's
and it's very complicated to read.
Yeah, she's the Enstrom.
Well, it is a little bit complicated in that the Enstrom company a couple of years ago acquired Stephanie's Chocolates, and our good friend Emery Dorsey had been with Stephanie's for a while after coming from his longtime company of Hammond Candies.
Uh-huh.
And
Emery is
exciting for us to buy Stephanie's and get to work with Emery, who's been a friend for over 25 years.
And Emery is a master candy maker. What does it take to be a master candy maker?
Oh, well, I get that a lot. It's probably just working at it for a long time. I've been doing it for 30 years and done everything from chocolate toffee to hard candies and exposure and a lot of time and a lot of patience.
Now, what's with this sweet tooth thing in Colorado? I mean, is Colorado a hotbed of candy, or is it just where you all happen to live?
Well, there's a number of nice candy companies here in Colorado, and I think if you go around the country, you'll find confectionaries in most of the states, really, from little mom and pops to larger manufacturers. But we just happen to represent two of the longtime Colorado candy companies that have been producing here in the state for the last 50 years or so, and even with Emery's family history prior to that, since the early 1900s. So it's we represent a long history of candy making in Colorado, and it's really exciting that we're joined together and working and collaborating on the two different lines of product that we produce now, which is the Enstrom line and the Stephanie's line. So it's very exciting to work with Emery, and we're having a lot of fun. And if I can just throw my 2 cents worth, and being a master means that Emery's probably made, over the last 30 years, he's probably made every mistake you can make making candy, and that's really the way you have to learn.
Oh, wow.
That's very true.
What's your worst mistake, Emery?
I haven't burnt down a plant yet, which is a good one. And Doug's right. I mean, it's learning from your mistakes and building from them. And we talk about mistakes. It's pretty interesting. I've developed a lot of candies from mistakes. And, I think some of the old traditional candy makers find that, the case too. I mean, butterscotch is a great, great example.
That was a mistake? Butterscotch?
It very well could have been. Hard candy was probably cooked a little too high, got a little too scorchy. Threw some butter in and some salt and end up with a nice butterscotch piece. So.
Do you think that the crunch product itself seems almost like a toffee gone crisp, so you can crunch it, whereas when I grew up in England, if you had toffee, it was chewable. And it was the kind of thing that took her fillings right out of your mouth, out of your head.
That's exactly right. I mean, an English toffee is really a hard caramel.
over here in the States.
And yes, yes, exactly.
You know, a toffee that we've developed over here in this country really could have been a mistake where somebody actually put too much sugar in and the product came out very grainy, but then they found out that they had the flavor, but it was yet very chewable and kind of tender to eat rather than the traditional hard British caramel. So
I just,
you never know how these things come about, but over the years, a lot of things have happened like that.
I just love crunching them. I mean, I think that just there's something about the sound and there's something about the hit of the sweetness that comes through that is really quite irresistible. And I'm not resisting very well at all, I'm afraid. I'm making my way through a big box. But I have a question.
I stole some and took them to the gym, and he got annoyed.
I have a question that has been puzzling me just a little bit. It doesn't puzzle Anne about so much because she's really not a very big candy eater at all. But we seem to have a very diet-conscious society right now, even though we also have a very obese society right now. But fine candies seem to be making a tremendous, I don't know whether it's called a comeback or that we're seeing a lot of growth. How can you explain that dilemma?
Well, I'll take a crack at it. I tell you, I think what happens is in this phase of our growth in the country and, you know, in the diet craze and what have you, I think what happens in the types of confections that we produce, we're really a smaller boutique manufacturer. And when you're dieting all the time and you're always watching what you're doing, I think when you get to the holidays, you're going to eat something. If you're going to cheat, you want it to be the very best. And you're not going to waste those calories on something that just is kind of marginal and maybe leans towards a good confection, but they've tried to take some of the calories out, and hence there goes the flavor. So we try to produce very high quality, top-notch ingredients go in and top-notch candy comes out so that it's a very high quality piece. And I think when people are going to splurge, they want to have something that's very high quality. And I think we fill that niche.
Well, that's correct.
You probably keep the price point at a place where people will say, well, I can't afford to eat all of this at once, not just because of the calories involved, but also because of how much I spent on it. So I need to sort of spread it out a little bit, or I need to share it with a group of family and friends or something like that.
Well, I'll tell you, Emery, chime in any time, but I'll tell you this, that we actually pride ourselves in making top-quality product, and we're not charging an arm and leg for it at the same time. We're very, very price conscious about making sure that we keep our products as affordable as we can, but we're not going to skimp on ingredients. And this now with our collaboration with Emery and his talents, we've been able to take many of our product lines that are now all natural, and we're using only the finest natural ingredients. We don't use preservatives and chemicals and colors that are bad and things like that. So Emery has brought a lot to the table on refining some of the products that we produce and just improving them so that they're even higher quality, better tasting, and actually better for you.
Well, you don't have a chance at all if you don't do that now. I mean, we just interviewed somebody who has a gelato sorbetto line that is everything you could think of. It's free of gluten. It's free of lactose. It's all natural products. It's all handmade. It's vegan. It's, you know, it's like, it's fair trade certified. Pretty soon they're going to ask you to certify your carbon print.
Well, and that's the hard part about what we do. I mean, it's trying to define, you know, what's a trend and then what's really a solid market product, you know. And you know, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was a low carb. And again, we don't see a whole lot of low carb candies out anymore. I mean, I don't see any labels.
Now we've got an Enstrom on the line somewhere there. Not able to speak unless Doug hands it over. Why don't we invite her to take us through the product line?
Yeah, I'd like to know what the hallmark products are, and also I'd like to know what it was like growing up in a candy making family.
Jamie, you want to take a crack at that?
Well, sure. I can tell you what it's like growing up in a candy business. My grandfather, you know, started the business before I was born, obviously, and my father joined the business when we were just little. So I'd love to come down and help my dad roll centers for chocolates.
And, oh wow!
And things like that. But I always wanted to be a chocolate dipper, so I practiced with my friends in the backyard with mud and rock. wasn't very tasty, but I sure had fun.
I tried
to dip a little bit, but my hands were too warm, so I didn't really ever get to become a chocolate dipper.
Oh, you mean you really, that's why they say there are no female sushi chefs, although there are, but the traditionalists don't believe women could make sushi right because their hands are too warm. Is that what you're talking about?
Interesting. Well, most dippers, I think, are women, so I don't know if that's really true, but there are a select few people that actually can dip because you have to have the right body temperature to be able to dip because you have to feel the chocolate cool to the correct temperature.
If
your body's too warm, you can't feel it.
So anyway, besides Stephanie's almond crunch, what are some of the other highlights of the family of products?
And what are your flagship products for Enstrom?
For Enstrom?
Enstrom and Stephanie's both.
Of course, our flagship product for Enstrom is the almond toffee. That's what my grandfather really started the candy side of the business. He was an ice cream manufacturer, and the toffee was an ingredient in his ice cream and very, very popular. And he had people asking him to make so much toffee that he decided in 1960 to convert his ice cream factory to a toffee factory. And from 1960 until just a couple of years ago, the only thing we actually offered was toffee through our mail order, but we've started offering other products now through our mail order company. Through Stephanie's, we make a beautiful line of truffles, and again, as Doug mentioned, they're all natural. Emery's done a beautiful job bringing in all natural fruits and beautiful truffles. They're wonderful.
No, we had some of the. Did you?
Yeah.
You ate all those.
Yeah, I wolfed all those.
Yeah, I didn't get any of those at all.
I wolfed all those down in no time. Well, you generally don't eat chocolate
truffles.
So I disposed of those real quickly, and I thought they were really lovely.
Emery could probably expound more on what he did to come up with those flavors and some of the assorted chocolates, the decadent assortment that we offer.
Oh, I think we got some of those too. I think I ate all of those too.
You have to understand this, that Peter's very skinny on top of it all.
But
I used to eat
horrible things like boiled sweets when I was growing up in England because they were inexpensive and my allowance only went so far. And it was always spent at what was called the sweet shop. I guess sweet shops the same kind don't exist anymore, but you're a wonderful substitute for them. Now, how do people get their hands on these wonderful products?
You said
you have an online store, but tell us more about that.
For Enstrom, I'll speak for Enstrom. We have our website, www.enstrom.com, and then also, 800-ENSTROM, and...
Which is E-N-S-T-R-O-M.
Right, and then we have four stores in Colorado. We have one here in Arvada, where the Stephanie's plant is located, and one in Cherry Creek, and then we have two in the Grand Junction area, one in a little town called Fruta, and one in Grand Junction. And in our stores, we also offer ice cream and a gourmet coffee shop. And then we have holiday kiosks, and we'll add three holiday kiosks for November and December.
But most on the menu listeners are going to be in somewhere other than Colorado, so it's a long ride, so using the website or the 800 number is probably better. Now, do you go out through specialty stores as well, or just the ways we just described?
The Enstrom line, is not found really in specialty stores, maybe just a select few, but primarily just the website and our stores, and mail order. On the Stephanie side, though, you can find our wonderful Butter Crunch and truffles and decadent assortment in all the Kroger, Safeway Kroger stores.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. All right. So you can get,
Safeway,
if you want.
Then,
so
sorry,
if you want,
Safeway, then Kroger.
So if you want instant gratification, that's the way of doing it.
That's right.
And we had someone on the program who had very kind words to say about how supportive you've been. That's the Brandini kids.
Oh, aren't they sweet?
They're amazing, absolutely amazing.
They're actually on last week's program.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, and
those kids are quite remarkable, aren't they? They're good, hard-working kids.
They are, and they really appreciate all the help that you've given them.
Oh, sure. I wish them a lot of luck. I think they'll do well.
Well, anyhow, I'm glad we got this all straightened out, and pretty soon we will be out of these toffee things. Peter will start crying.
They'll have to prey on somebody else. I want to hear a last thought from the Candy King, Emery. Emery, do you have a new product that you want to leak information about, or anything else that'd be a last thought that you want to leave to On the Menu listeners?
I don't have a whole lot of new things on the plate right now. I just encourage people to try new things. You know, there's more out there than the standard Hershey and Mars bar. And,
oh, thank goodness.
And there's some wonderful things, and Enstrom's and Stephanie's are great testaments to that. So, you know, if the folks out there are listening, you know, go out and hunt down your favorite candy shop and you know, try something different, something unusual that you've never tried before.
Something with hot chili in it.
You know, that's fun. You know, we've experimented with that. We've experimented with, like, you know, a truffle with, you know, strawberry cheesecake truffles and things like this. It's, you know, and that's part of the fun of the business. You know?
Did you ever do something? I wanted to do something with chocolate and green peppercorns.
and that might be a hit.
Well, give me credit if you do it.
Yeah, you can call it an Annie bar.
There you go.
Well, it's so nice to have the opportunity to talk to you all. So we'll say goodbye to Emery. We'll say goodbye to Jamie, and we'll say goodbye to Doug. And thank you so much for joining On the Menu Radio.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks very much.
Bye. And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu. Put our email address on speed dial, if you will, and it's onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. I guess you don't have speed dial for email, but what I mean.
You have the equivalent. There's the equivalent, although we haven't quite figured out how to do it yet.
Well, yeah, but we're now moving on from candy to...
We'll certainly stay in the sweet space.
It's sweet, yes.
But I guess you'd call this next thing...
Soy gelato.
I think it's all about dessert.
Marcia Blackwell, welcome to On the Menu. We've been enjoying your gelato and sorbetto, and it's wonderful to talk to you.
In fact, there were midnight refrigerator raids last night. And there was a mouse had been there ahead of me when I visited and had a taste. And Marcia, it's just... so wonderful. It tastes so wonderful. How can this be? How do you make it like that?
Oh, well, thank you, Ann and Peter. I really do appreciate your kind comments. It's quite a compliment. We make our desserts all by hand, so we are actually pureeing all the fruit ourselves. You were mentioning our raspberry sorbet to me earlier today, and that's just real fresh raspberries pureed with a little organic fair trade evaporated cane juice, splash of lemon, pinch of sea salt. So what cannot taste good about that?
Now, where are you actually making these?
We are making these in Red Bank, New Jersey, which is on the shore, the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
And how did you decide to? I mean, you just let's put this out in front. This raspberry sorbet just won a Gold Sophie Award at the Fancy Food Show in New York for outstanding USDA. Proved organic.
Yes, that's correct. It proved organic product. And we won the best out of 42 different products that were entered in that category.
I'm surprised there weren't even more. I mean, I've never seen so much organic.
Mm-hmm.
Yours, is it gluten-free too?
We're gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan, 100% organic, and all of our flavors have at least one fair trade component.
No, why did you end up doing this, or how did you end up doing this?
I was laid off from what I thought was the perfect job.
Which
I brought my dog to work every day. We made a really great salary. It was very close to my house. I was in the telecom field. And like many people here in New Jersey, I lost my job. And unemployment said that I probably would not find another job very quickly. How about if I start my own business? And I said, that could be something interesting we might like to try. And one of our friends said, what about making that gelato and selling it in stores?
And had you been making it before?
My husband, Tom, had been making it for a couple years.
Okay, so you knew something about how to make it and how to make it taste good in small volume, but getting it to a business-size volume must have been quite a challenge.
It was quite a challenge because the machinery is different. And, you know, raspberries are raspberries, but you know, we get them in, you know, 25-pound boxes rather than one pint at the store. So it was really different. You know, we had opportunities to try a lot of different sweeteners and seeing what would work best and what was available in, you know, in larger quantities.
And you settled with
cane juice right?
and organic agave.
Yes,
well.
Mm-hmm. We use organic fair trade evaporated cane juice and organic agave nectar. The actual reason for using the cane juice is not just the sweetening part, but it's actually the bulk of the sugar that helps to create the creaminess.
Yes, this
okay,
is,
I got you.
The
yep,
texture
yep.
is a big issue. I've talked to ice cream makers, and that's the issue.
Right, yeah. And how I like to describe that to people is, if you put a strawberry in the freezer, it comes out hard as a rock. But if you add a little bit of the sugar, that bulk, that texture of the sugar will actually, you know, add more fiber to the berry and then allow it to become soft.
Now, here's a question that I think has intrigued me for a long time, and I suspect it intrigues listeners as well. Explain quickly the difference between a sorbetto or a sorbet and a gelato?
Well, a sorbet or sorbetto, which is the Italian word for sorbet, is just made with fruit and then some type of sweetener. So there wouldn't be any dairy, any soy, or any type of nut milk or rice milk involved. So that would just be your fruit-based frozen dessert. And then gelato, which is actually the Italian word for frozen, is usually made with milk, where American ice creams are made with cream. So
yeah, it's lower in calories, isn't it?
It's lower in calories and lower in fat and actually fuller of flavor. The butter fat and super premium American ice creams makes them creamy, but it also coats your tongue, so the flavors are not as bright and bold.
So that's why sorbets are fresher.
No, well, right. Gelatos are fresher than ice.
And gelatos
are fresher than
sorbets
ice cream,
too.
And sorbets are fresher than gelato, I guess.
Right,
so
right.
It's a matter of which you like. So if you...
And then we use soy milk, so there's no fat really at all in our product.
Now, what led you to that decision? I mean, did you have a family history of intolerance?
Dairy intolerance. My husband, Tom, is allergic to lactose, so that's what had him starting to make these products at home. And so we decided we would, you know, stay with a product that we would want to eat ourselves. And then gluten in ice cream traditionally comes from natural flavorings. They're usually a wheat or gluten base. And we decided we didn't want to use any natural flavorings or extracts in our product, so we could be gluten-free. So we actually brew the coffee for our coffee gelato.
Good grief. That's
scrape
amazing.
The vanilla beans, all those types of things. So it's just really true flavors.
It's no wonder it tastes good, Marcia.
Oh, thank you.
Now, we have four packages. We have raspberry, orange, coffee, and chocolate. Are there more flavors in the range, or are there more to come in the future?
There are more flavors in the range. We do a peanut butter chocolate swirl, which is amazing. And you've had the coffee. We do a vanilla, like I said, where we hand scrape the vanilla beans, and those are soy gelatos. And then we do a lemon, a mango, and a strawberry.
Wow.
Okay, they all sound absolutely fabulous. And where do you get the fruit?
We get our fruit from all over the world because I need to have strawberries available 12 months out of the year.
Okay, all right. So that was the supply chain was a part of the issue you had to solve as well, right?
Well, the supply, besides where to get them from, when we started the business, everyone said, oh, yes, I can sell you a tractor trailer load of strawberries. And I was like, well, where am I going to store a tractor trailer load of strawberries?
Yeah.
Can you tell? And this was basically with every part of our business. Then I said, well, who do you sell those tractor trailer loads to? And I said, oh, well, we sell them to, you know, XYZ company. So then I called XYZ company and I said, could you break it into pallet quantities for me? And they said, yes. And I said, well, what if I don't want to buy a pallet? Who do you think I should go to? And they suggested a couple people, and then I was able in the beginning to, you know, find someone who could sell me 100 pounds of strawberries rather than 1,000 pounds of strawberries.
Now, how long have you been doing this for, Marcia?
Just 3 years.
Wow, yeah. Well, this is
you've made a lot of progress.
This is an amazing story. Now let's do the important thing, and I'm sure you have a website. Perhaps you fill orders through the mail, but you also have a store locator where people can find this.
Actually, we do not currently have a store. We do have an online store called gelatobymail.com, GelatoByMail, and we can ship anywhere in the USA with FedEx and dry ice.
Now, what about, is it available in grocery stores?
It is available in grocery stores in New York, New Jersey, and Philadelphia, and Southern Connecticut. Most people will be familiar with Whole Foods, and we're in Whole Foods.
Oh, great. Okay.
Stores in those regions, as well as independent gourmet specialty markets.
Now, are you intending to go further than that? I'm sure you are in due course.
We are in due course looking to go further than that, hopefully into New England and down to Maryland and Virginia.
Could you do that website again? It's Gelato?
GelatoByMail.com.
ByMail.com, okay.
And then our general website for the business is BlackwellsOrganic.com.
And I got a tip for you listeners, and this was a real surprise to me. In the package that we got from Marcia's company, there was a special note that said, you will need to allow this product to melt a little bit in the freezer. And indeed, we had to do that, because in the dry ice it comes, it's a solid frozen chunk at quite a number of degrees below zero centigrade and below 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, you know what? I couldn't wait. I heated a spoon.
But what's more fun, Peter, than getting ice cream in the mail?
Yeah, what a cheater she is.
Oh, dear. Well, this has been a treat for us, Marcia, and thank you for talking to us.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I hope that we can do it again.
We wish you continued success, and that you'll always be pleased that you exited the telecom business. Friends of mine who are listening will know that, in fact, I did the same thing about 2 years ago. So we've been in one another's footsteps to an extent.
Right.
And I'm doing something interesting, and you are too, so congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. Well, when one door closes, another one opens.
That's true. Okay, Marcia, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
And Marcia is one woman that we've come to know and love. And we have another one that we're going to be interviewing called Melissa. Everybody in the area of Brooklyn knows Melissa because they say she's sweet. Melissa Murphy is a chef, an entrepreneur, a food writer. She's Sweet Melissa Baking Shops in, or Patisserie, if we're going to be authentic and precise about it, in Brooklyn. And she's now authored a book called The Sweet Melissa Baking Book, which is yummy.
It is yummy. Thank you very much.
And I'll bet Melissa's a real sweetheart.
My mom thinks so, anyway.
Well, we discovered the funniest thing in talking before the program, that in fact your first name has something to do with bees.
That's right. Melissa means honeybee. So the honeybee is our part of our logo, and he's our little mascot, and he's all over our shop and in our stickers and our packaging and everything. So it's a very fun, cute little friend to have around.
Do you think you became a pastry chef because your name is honeybee?
I don't know. What do you think?
I believe in that.
Well, I've always had a serious sweet tooth, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Now, tell us a little bit about this book. Is this your first book, Melissa?
It is my first book. It just came out this year, and I am so happy to have my recipes organized in one place.
Oh, you're not one of those. Like,
I sure am. They're everywhere.
Oh, dear. A neat little business just sprung up with somebody who will take all of your recipes, organize them, laminate them, and have them bound in a book.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a great idea for a family.
Home thing.
Yeah.
It would be a nice present for your daughter-in-law or whatever.
Yeah, that would be great.
Now, tell us about your style. I mean, I think that you're focusing on some comforting desserts, traditional, but you're also a perfectionist, as I understand.
That's right. I wonder how you heard that. yeah, my style is definitely a French-influenced American approach to baking, and I just, you know, I went to the French Culinary Institute, which was fantastic. I loved it. One of the best experiences of my life. And I've worked for lots of different restaurants and quite a few French restaurants as well. So, you know, I certainly understand, and a lot of the techniques we use in all baking are French techniques. So it's certainly a French-influenced American style of baking, but I definitely have a soft spot for all of the American classics, you know, the pies and the layer cakes and, you know, sticky buns and bread puddings. Like, that's the stuff that really makes me crazy.
Now, you say in your introduction, basically, that you like these perfected special traditions and that we're going to now be able to use this book and also make perfect desserts.
That's right. Well, the book is tested and tested and tested. So I am really confident that, and I've gotten a lot of feedback about the book over and over again, people writing me and telling me that whatever they made turned out perfectly, and it just makes me so happy to know that, you know, in fact, it's as useful as I was hoping it would be, and it's just, people are just thrilled with the results.
Now, what do you think some of the secrets, Melissa, to being successful as a pastry chef? And we've had other people tell us different things. I'm just interested in what you think is particularly important.
Well, you know, it's funny. For me, I think a lot of pastry chefs and chefs, for sure, spend a lot of time finding out what's new, what's different, what's next, and trying to almost be ahead of the game and show people something they've never seen before. And I find that all very interesting, but I kind of look backward. I like to go back and find out, you know, what goes in this big old-fashioned lemon meringue pie. What can I do to that will make it different and special? So I kind of like to put my own spin on the classic.
Yeah, we had a guest a few months ago who wrote a book of recipes that had essentially been lost
desserts.
Yeah, they call lost desserts. And what she did was she rediscovered these desserts and rediscovered the recipes. There were things like Charlotte Russe,
which is
a great, because I come from a nation of dessert eaters.
Sure.
You missed them out. I mean, you talked about the French, and you talked about Americans eating dessert, and you forgot all about the kings and queens of dessert.
Yeah, you're right. I do make queen's cakes in my shop, though, which are little iced petits, which everybody loves. So you would be familiar with those for sure.
Yeah, you probably don't make spotted dick, though.
No.
you probably should be. It'd be a great success, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you.
Now, what are bee stings?
Bee stings are my own little creation. What, you know, I have a thing for donuts. I actually wrote a story in the book about going to the bakery with my dad. We'd go every Sunday morning and take everybody's order, and I'd try to remember it in the car, and we'd get to the bakery, and everyone would know my name, and, you know, I was too shy to ask theirs, but I would, you know, spend the morning picking out my favorite dress, and my mom would put my hair up in these twirly pigtails, and it was just a big event for me to go to the bakery with my dad. So I have a thing for donuts. When I opened my bakery, I don't have a fryer at my bakery, so I wasn't able to do the donuts that I love so much. So I decided to compromise and do my version of a cream-filled donut made with a tender brioche bun,
dough
that, you know, I roll into little buns and then bake them. I fill them with a vanilla custard cream, and then I dip them in pure Sweet Melissa style with, you know, I love to use honey in so many of my different recipes. So I dip that filled bun into a sticky caramel honey mixture on the top, and then sprinkle it with toasted almonds. And they're like a little cream-filled donut. They're just delicious.
Now, you won some kind of a prize in, now what was the dessert? Sponsored by the Almond Council?
Oh, the Almond Board. This is a funny one. Peter will like this. I don't know. You know, everybody hates fruitcake, right? It's got a very bad reputation.
Actually, I absolutely adore fruitcake.
I'm sure you do. That's why I said that at the beginning. Well, Americans have this thing against fruitcake, and I don't know. It's got a pretty bad rap. So I have this recipe that is a golden almond fruitcake, and I entered it into this contest that was sponsored by the California Almond Board. The fruitcake has ground almonds, you know, an almond flour in it. It also has whole blanched chopped almonds in it that are roasted before they go into the batter. And it's also got marzipan in it.
Oh,
and
wow.
What I do with the marzipan is I pat it out into like a rectangle, if you will. I freeze it, and then I cube it, and then keep it frozen in these little cubes. And I stir them into this batter, which is, the batter on its own is just absolutely delicious. And when you add the diced marzipan to it, along with all of the fruits I put in, dried sour cherries, dried apricots, dried pineapple, no candied fruits, just dried fruits that I macerate in like a rum and brandy mixture. And so you stir in all of those dried fruits, and then you stir in these bits of marzipan, pour it into the loaf pan, and you sprinkle the top with more toasted almonds and bake it. And when it comes out, you glaze it with a sweetened rum and sugar sauce. It's not very boozy, though. It's very nice. And it won this contest, and I thought it was so funny because, you know, I have to literally convince my customers to try it.
That's
because
what
you said. they say, oh, fruit cake, no, no, thank you. No, you know, thank you, but no, no, thank you. So, no, no, taste it. Really, you have to taste it. So I have to put samples out all over the store. And sure enough, if they taste it, they love it. It's absolutely delicious.
Can you order that by mail?
You know, I don't have a mailing system set up yet, but that would actually, if we're going to start it,
That would be a perfect
thing to ship.
Now, the name of the contest was rather unusual. That was pretty
cool. Marzipandemonium.
Because an English fruitcake can't really be an English fruitcake if it doesn't have a layer of marzipan on the side and a thicker one on the top and then icing on the outside of everything.
Fondant, yeah.
And then there's another kind of cake called a simnel cake, which is traditional, I think, at Easter time, which has a layer of marzipan in the middle.
I'm
going to have to make a trip over there and find out what making desserts is really about.
Bite your tongue.
Well, Melissa, tell us at least the websites of the people coming to New York and zip over to Brooklyn and see.
Sure.
Yeah, your website is?
My website is sweetmelissapatisserie.com. And I don't know if I should spell that. That patisserie is a little tricky.
Yeah, because it's singular in the address, and it's in the book. It's plural.
I hope that's not true.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and spell it out.
Okay, it's sweetmelissap, as in Paul, A, T, as in Tom, I, S as in Sam, erie.com.
Actually, this is perfect. The same exact website that's listed.
Great.
Where's plural is in the account.
Okay.
Anyhow.
Oh, good. That's good to know.
So you're okay.
is there another Melissa's around the corner? Are you planning to cross the East River and invade Manhattan?
You know, I did do a store. I had a store for a short time in Manhattan on Houston Street. We were open for about 3 months or so, 4 months, and everything was going great. And then New York City decided to rip up Houston Street, which was right in front of my store.
Yeah.
So for a while there, nobody could get into my store.
Yeah, no.
So I found out that this project was going to continue for another 2 years. So I decided to take everything that I had and move it to my new Park Slope location, which is at 175 7th Avenue in Park Slope. And I never told you the address of the other location, which is 276 Court Street in Cobble Hill, Brooklyn.
Oh, nice.
And Brooklyn's the hot new destination in New York anyway. So
it is. I love Brooklyn. I've lived here now for, about 12 years, and I love it. We have such a great food scene here, and so much. You know, we have a lot of different types of people living here. We have Italian people, and they have wonderful specialty food shops, and you know, all different nationalities represented in our neighborhoods, and it just makes for a really, really great food scene.
Well, it sounds like fun, Melissa.
Yeah,
it sounds like you're having a great time. And
I am.
It's been fun talking to you as well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get to see your shop sometime.
Oh, I would love that.
And let us know if you start doing mail orders. I'll get some of that fruitcake for Peter.
Okay, you got it. You'll have to give me your address. Maybe you'll get a surprise for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
You'll be my test run, okay?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, Melissa. Well, thank you for talking to us.
Well, thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure talking with you both.
Okay, Melissa. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now it's time to take another break.
And we'll talk to you on the other side.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are back again on the menu at onthemenuradio.com.
That's our email address, of course.
Well, it sounds like an email address, doesn't it?
It does. But one of these days we'll tell the story of how the at sign got in the middle of email addresses, but that's a story for another day.
It's way far from our next title, which is a three-letter word that begins with an F, and it's called fat.
In a world filled with diet books, as well as when it seems like half the cookbooks that come out are about diets, it really must be a rather unusual and brave person to write a book, the title of which is Fat. And Jennifer McLagan is a bit of a contrarian, we've already discovered. So we said, well, okay, Jennifer, start out by telling us why you decided this was a subject you were going to write about.
It's just startling to pick up this book and on the... There it is. F-A-T is the title.
So go ahead.
I'm a big fan of one-word titles. I like to get it out there and tell you exactly what you're getting.
Well, the photo is also, I mean, it's fairly demonstrative of the...
the photo of those lamb chops is brilliant, isn't it?
It's just gorgeous.
Such amazing shot of two things that you should never put on a cookbook, lamb and fat. And I think I just wanted to do something that was contrarian, and also, you know, I just realized how much I love fat and how I eat fat all the time, and I was so sick of people saying, you know, I don't eat fat, or I would something like just a delicious roast chicken and they would cut the skin off or they would leave the fat on the side of the plate, and I said, that's where all the flavor is. Flavor is in the fat. If there is no fat, there is no taste, there is no flavor, and there's no satisfaction in your food. And everyone is so paranoid about fat. I wanted, you know, make its profile good again. I wanted to bring fat back.
Well, I think, listeners, if in case you don't follow every book that comes out, this is the author whose first book was called Bones. and it turns out that we have a mutual friend called Fergus Henderson. And Fergus has an interesting thing that he says about pork, which is his favorite. He says, if we're going to kill the animal, at least we should do the decent thing and eat every piece of it. So we have had him serve us both pig's heads and pig's tails. and of course, he serves everything in between. And I think you said your approach was a lot like that, that the larder of foods available to us, the animals available to us, we should have recipe books for all of them.
Well, what he actually says about this book is, like cars, we all need lubrication, except ours is ideally taken in the form of pork fat. That is where the flavor lies. What a treat this book is, a proper celebration of the good bits.
Well, let's have Jennifer respond to that. I mean, you talked about, you did a book about bones the second time, and bones the first time and fat the second time, but you said there was a reason why.
Well, there is, because both of those things are things that have been thrown out with how we cook today, because everything is lean and boneless. And people wonder why, you know, they have to put some exotic sauce or spicing on it, because things that are boneless and lean have no taste. And so I'm keen on both of those things, putting the bones back into people's kitchen, and now I want to put the fat back. And it's exactly what Fergus said. You know, there's a lot of interest in food and the political part of food and the moral part of food at the moment. There's a lot of books on that subject. And, you know, if we're going to kill an animal, we should be eating every part of it. And fat is a part of the animal, and that's being discarded. Is it put into landfill? I don't know what they're doing with it, but it's certainly...
Put into landfills.
But it's certainly difficult to get your hands on. And it's interesting, you know, the pig is a classic because pork fat is just one of those fats you can use for everything, and there's so many different kinds of pork fat. But, you know, the pigs used to be valued as much for their fat as their meat. You know, a pig used to be like, almost, you know, 50% fat, and that was the part that was more valuable than the meat.
I guess, going back to heritage breeds, but they bred a whole different animal, the pork.
And that's taking over slowly. I'm in Canada, and it's becoming very popular here, and I know Fergus serves Middle Whites and Tamworths, and these are pigs that take time to raise, but they they produce delicious meat with a good, healthy layer of fat, and that's where the taste is. And it's very satisfying. A slice of pork belly is one of the best things you can eat.
Of course, Peter's favorite thing is lardo.
And you say right on, you say right inside the front flyleaf. Instead, a fat phobia has driven us into the arms of trans fats and refined carbohydrates, and fostered punitive, dreary attitudes towards food. So in fact, you set out in equal parts with passion, scholarship, appetite to win us back to a healthy relationship with animal fats. Tell us how you do that.
I think you a lot of people, it'll be a hard move because they've been so psychologically, brainwashed into thinking that fat is bad for them. So I want to tell them straight off, you know, fat doesn't make you fat. We seem to think that the fat on the plate will go straight to our hip, and it's not the same thing. Body's much more complex than that, and I think that they should realize that maybe eating fat will make them lose weight, because what fat is about is it's very satisfying. It helps you digest protein, and you only need a smaller amount if there's some fat there. So you may eat less, and you may snack less, and that's probably the big problem with most people putting on weight is the snacking in between meals. So I want them to realize that fat isn't going to make them fat, that fat's important for their cooking. You know, it's really, really hard to cook without fat. Anyone who's gone on a diet or anything, they're always hungry because they're eating without fat, and then cooking without fat. You know, how do you fry without fat? You know, fat's a really important thing for cooking with, right? It's absolutely essential. You know, it stops the food sticking from the pan. It keeps it succulent and juicy, and it makes it crisp and caramelized. It's almost impossible to cook without fat. So once people realize that, I'm trying to coax them back into putting fat back into their diet.
Now when you're doing that with recipes that call for the proper use of fat. I mean, that's one ingredient in a book, isn't it?
Yes. It's like I'm not just frying up slices of butter and slices of pork fat, although I'd be quite happy doing that. I'm just saying, think about butter. Think how amazing butter is as a product. Here is something that the cream you take from an animal, and you can just shake it up in a jar or whisk it up in your machine, and you can make butter. It's like so magical. Think about that. Think about how wonderful it tastes. And then remember that butter's a seasonal product, and it changes through the year. I mean, all these things people have forgotten. You know, we're much more prepared to believe a celebrity than our grandmother. And I think we should remember that people have been eating animal fat for hundreds of thousands of years, and it really didn't do them any harm. It's only in the last 30 years we've suddenly become afraid of it.
Now, are there any sort of secrets to having good uses of fat in recipes that you've discovered?
Secrets in what way? I think first you have to be sure of your source of fat, and
okay.
It needs to come from a good animal. And butter is probably easier to get. With the other fats, I'm afraid you're probably going to have to render them yourself. And everyone goes, oh, well, that's too difficult. And I'd explain that, and it's really quite a simple process. It's just a matter of chopping up pieces of fat, putting them in a pan and putting it in the oven and coming back in a few hours. And so then once you have that fat, keep it in your freezer, and then you can use it. Like, it's so amazing to cook pork in pork fat or beef in beef fat. And lamb and lamb fat, because it adds another depth of flavor.
Okay, so you're not just talking about recipes that have fatty ingredients like lamb chops and pork chops and things like that. You're also preparing people to stock their larder with fats that they can use in a wide variety of recipes.
Yes, because I think I'd like them to replace some of the ubiquitous vegetable oils with fats, because that's what's taken out of our diet. Fat has been taken out, and we use vegetable oils for everything. Or we use olive oil for everything, and I have nothing against olive oil. I love it. But fat is the base of a cuisine. It's the base flavor. So if you want everything to taste slightly Mediterranean, cook it all in olive oil. That's fine. But if you want to have an amazing Cornish pasty, make the pastry with dripping and then have a nice fatty lamb mix in there, that's what you want. You want to get the flavors out of those fats and then put them into your cooking.
Well, even McDonald's knew the secret, right? Because they used to fry their famous French fries in animal fat.
Well, until
everybody found out they were doing it and was horrified.
Well, they fried it in tallow, and that gave it the best flavor. And I read some research that even the FDA in the States said that the French fries that McDonald's made in tallow had less fat in them than the ones they now make in the vegetable oil.
Quickly for listeners, let's point out that tallow is beef, rendered beef fat, correct?
That's right.
Whereas lard is rendered pork.
That's right.
Now, here's one of Peter's favorite things, pork crackling. Cannot buy a pork roast in this country with the crackling attached.
Well, I think you probably now can't. You can't
FDA's.
You can't get one. You can't get one out of the mainstream system. I think people have to be going around of the FDA, and then you certainly can because we have had that.
But, now, Jennifer, you grew up in Australia, right?
That's right. Yes.
Which if the listeners would explain this accent, and one that I'm very fond of, by the way. And so you would have grown up in a culinary tradition that respected fats.
Yes, I hadn't really thought about it. And of course, when you grow up, you just assume that everyone's growing up the same way. But when I grew up, there was always lard and dripping and, well, not suet was a little bit more seasonal, but they were all fats that were in our fridge or our freezer. I mean, we picked up lard from the butcher. And it always came in little wax containers, and it was just straight lard, rendered pork fat. It wasn't hydrogenated. There was no trans fats or anything in it. And we thought nothing of cooking with that. And we made suet dumplings with a golden syrup sauce, which was so delicious and light. And all our steamed puddings, which is a great English tradition, they all contain suet, which makes the best lightest steamed pudding. I mean, people now substitute butter, which I love, but it doesn't make the same kind of steamed pudding that suet makes, and we made pastries using all these mixtures of fat. And we weren't supermodels, but we weren't grossly obese either.
Well, you know, when we lived in Australia, I went set off to make a pie, and I was set off looking for Crisco. Now, of course, Crisco.
They never heard of any such thing.
And, so now, of course, it turns out that the villain is really the trans fat, although they've taken it out of Crisco, supposedly. I don't know. It still doesn't have much flavor.
That's the thing. You know, we got, I mean, there's always the love of the new and something different. And if you have science and you have the government and everybody telling you that you shouldn't be eating these fats, then, of course, you make that switch, right? And it really, although we've, decreased our animal fat intake over the last 30, 35 years, we haven't got any healthier. And I really think we need to reevaluate what we've been doing with our diet. And a lot of people have been crying in the wilderness for a long time, like Weston Price and all these different associations, and no one's been listening to them. But slowly now people are realizing that, they're realizing that animal fat isn't saturated fat. No fat is completely saturated or unsaturated. They're all a mixture of saturated, unsaturated, and polyunsaturated. So you can't just say, oh, it's saturated fat. There's saturated fat in every fat you eat. So that's not what's making it bad.
Jennifer, I'd love to be your friend and have you for dinner for a number of quirky touches to this book, including page 152, which has a little pull-out box in yellow called Jazzy Fat.
Tell us
what that is.
Well, this is the interesting thing is this is part history and philosophy book anyway, but answer Anne's question, Jennifer.
Well, like schmaltz is one of those things. Am I talking about the same thing?
No. You just had this little box that says this really about Fats Waller.
Oh, Fats Waller, yes.
Historical note, Fats Waller's real name was Thomas Wright Waller. And then you could just give a little history of him and
how
bio.
Was, I picked up on him because there were jazz singers too, and schmaltz is poultry fat, and then the jazz singers introduced that into the current language, so we think of something schmaltzy as, well, the music they didn't play that wasn't jazz, and that was schmaltzy music.
I must say, though, that, that whatever that stuffed derma is, a turkey neck stuffed with chopped up fat and everything, I ate one of those once and had an absolutely amazing gallbladder attack.
No, so you have to be sensible about these things. I have one last question, because listeners, I want to take it to this book, not just because it's about food, but also because it's about the philosophy and history of food, which I think is a fascinating subject. Tell me this, Jennifer, did you ever find out who Jack and Mrs. Spratt were?
No, there's lots of historical stuff that's unproved about King of England and that kind of thing, but I don't think anybody knows for sure. But that was a nursery rhyme, as far as I was concerned. It was a nursery rhyme that I grew up with, right?
Oh, yeah, but all those nursery rhymes had some kind of meaning, like Little Miss Muffet and Bo Peep Lost Her Sheep, all referred apparently to political figures of the time who were being satirized, if you like, in these nursery rhymes. So I wondered if you knew who Jack Spratt actually was, and the answer is you don't. So,
no, I don't. I'm afraid I don't. I think I found a couple of things, but I couldn't get a double check on them, so
okay.
Then I left it out of the book if I couldn't verify it in another.
Well, this book is more than a cookbook. This book is worth just pondering section to section. There's always there's a touch of whimsy here. There's history there. And it makes me hungry.
Well, that's good. And I'm happy that you find it is a good read, because I think it's nice to be able to read cookbooks, even if you never, I hope you make the recipes, but even if you don't, if you find some quirky fact that you can drop at a cocktail party or learn something that you didn't know before, then I've done my job, right? Because it's always nice to learn something new or discover something different.
This is a new book. Just came in within a few days or the last couple of weeks. It's one we'd suggest you add to your cookbook collection. Jennifer, it was a delight to have you on the program and to have a chance to talk to you.
It was a delight talking to you both.
Okay, Jennifer, and don't forget, listeners, it's called Fat, An Appreciation of a Misunderstood Ingredient with Recipes, and with lots of other stuff, too, Jennifer. Okay, dear, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate your interest.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, that was fun. It's been another exciting hour, and I think that
let's hope we haven't contributed too much to the expansion of the waistline of on the menu family.
She says it's all right. Good for it.
No, fat's good for you, and a little
moderation.
A little bit of candy, a little bit of confectionery is also allowed.
And a little pastry.
Yeah, is that allowed in our diet too?
A lot of butter.
There you go. We eat lots of that. We hope you do too.
Bacon, lamb chops.
Jack Spratt would eat no fat. His wife would eat no lean. And so betwixt them both, you see, they licked the platter clean. And we haven't been able to find out. What's behind that story? And
something to do with the King of England.
But Jennifer said that she had heard stories, but she didn't want to really go through the explanation of it. So if anybody knows, send us information to onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com.
Oh, and I think, Ravido, that wraps it up for another week. So until we see you same time, same place next week, I'm going to say bye-bye.
Well, I was going to finish up telling the story about Bob's your uncle, but we'll have to do that another day.
Thank heavens.